And welcome to a new week of Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Countdown for the Super Bowl. Just a few days. The Philadelphia Eagles will go up against the Kansas City Chiefs. So I'm rewinding back 6 years in my mind. I was a reporter. And I got to travel to D.C., Avi, and sit in the press galley of the U.S. Supreme Court to hear oral arguments over a big case related to sports betting.
Wow.
Yeah, New Jersey.
I didn't know that.
New Jersey. It was a New Jersey law that...
What's your favorite memory from that trip?
Well, just being able to sit in the court and seeing all the justices talk about it. And, you know, I never really covered sports, but I covered the Supreme Court for the time. And so it was thrilling to be able to go down there. But what I didn't know...
What'd you have for lunch that day?
I do not remember.
Okay. just trying. Maybe
I did have a gray dress on. I do remember my outfit. But
there you go.
That's about it.
I knew you had a memory.
But I will say this. Had no idea that sports betting would explode to the level that it has in the past 6 years.
You were standing there on the precipice of history.
Didn't know. I mean, at the time, you know, the leagues, the professional leagues were against sports betting.
Dead set against
and
it.
And now they're raking in the cash. Dollar bill. And so there's a recent lawsuit in New Jersey alleging that DraftKings uses deceptive practices to lure people into the app and to keep people betting. So we thought, hey, let's talk about sports betting. Let's look at how it's changed the industry, changes how people watch sports, but also has caused a rise in compulsive gambling and gambling addiction. So we have a couple experts coming in. And our question of the day is, how has the rise of online sports gambling affected you? How has it affected your friends and your family? You can call us 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Avi, I know you're a big sports person. I'm not sure if you're a betting man.
Never have.
Wow.
I've never done it.
Not even among friends?
Well, would you count?
No, that's not really.
I'm in like a $50 fantasy football
league. That's about it. That's your.
I've never wagered through an app.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm a little worried I'd get sucked in, to be perfectly honest with you.
Know thyself.
By the way, Super Bowl this year, the halftime show is Kendrick Lamar.
Yay.
Do you think future Metro Boomin, Lil Wayne, or Baby Keem will appear? Who's the most likely of those to appear during the show with Kendrick Lamar?
Interesting. That's a good question. I think Future's probably going to be there. That's a good bet.
You can bet on that.
Yeah, that's a good bet.
You can literally bet on that. Will there be a power outage at the Super Bowl? Will Travis Kelce propose to Taylor Swift? There are so many prop bets associated with the Super Bowl.
That's part of the betting?
Yeah.
The proposal?
I think those are offshore books. But yeah, those are real bets that you can make for the Super Bowl. It's crazy how pervasive it has become. Again, the number is 888-477-9499. The email studio2@whyy.org, or comment right there in the live stream. I saw AGB already had a really fascinating comment in the live stream. Trio of local news stories. And obviously this happened when we were off the air.
Yeah.
We have not been on the air since last week, but we would be remiss if we did not at least mention the tragic plane crash near Roosevelt Mall in Northeast Philadelphia Friday evening. All six people on board that plane were killed, including a child and her mother who were returning to Mexico after the child received medical treatment here. One person on the ground has already died, 24 injured, 4 people still in the hospital, according to city officials. That's what we know today, Tuesday, February 4th. But this is still an evolving situation. We don't yet know the cause, but we know that workers have recovered the black box from the plane. And we know that the plane had just taken off from the regional airport in Northeast Philly when it crashed.
Yeah.
Mayor Sherelle Parker is requesting state and federal aid. We don't know the status of those requests. We do know, according to city officials, that 4 homes were destroyed and more than 300 homes affected by this crash and the resulting fires. And we also know there will be a town hall meeting tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And that's the latest on a tragedy that has gripped the entire region.
Yeah, and thoughts and prayers to the families who lost loved ones and those still dealing with the injuries and just the aftermath of this tragedy. You know, we're going to see what happens with regard to federal aid. So far, no word yet on whether you know, Governor Josh Shapiro will request a presidential, you know, state of an emergency so they can free up those federal funds. So we'll be on the lookout for that.
Speaking of Governor Josh Shapiro, he is, we believe, at the podium
and right now.
Right now in Harrisburg giving his 2025 budget address.
Yes,
what
is.
Can you tell us about that, Cherry?
Well, he did release a transcript of his speech, and his main priorities will include education, transportation funding, energy policy, as well as pushing new streams of tax revenue from legalization of adult use cannabis and skills games. The vices have been hot topics in Harrisburg for a couple of years now, and it won't be the first time that Governor Shapiro has stumped for legalization of recreational marijuana or for regulation of video skills games. You know, the ones, the video games you see in like poppy stores and things like that. The measures have had some bipartisan support, but have failed to get legislative approval. But Shapiro says, look, in his speech, he says, quote, Pennsylvanians who want to buy cannabis are just driving across the border to one of our neighbors, because now it's, you know, it's legal in New Jersey, also legal in Delaware. So he's saying, why shouldn't Pennsylvania capitalize on this? He also talked about transportation funding. He did not say the word SEPTA in his speech as far as the transcript is concerned, but he did mention Philadelphia Mass Transit, how there needs to be permanent funding for that. And he's broadened it, though, and said there will be, you know, he wants more money for roads and bridges throughout the Commonwealth. He also is talking about.
He's asking for a lot of stuff here.
Man, making more fun,
right.
Making, you know, deeper investments in education, like vocational, you know, education, community colleges, you know, public colleges and more. So he has a lot of issues that he's trying to deal with on his agenda.
Sure. And the skills games stuff is interesting that he wants to tap into the revenue for that because of today's topic.
Yes.
And, you know, one thing that will probably be mentioned today is the fact that gambling doesn't bring in huge numbers. But when you're trying to balance a state budget,
every little bit counts.
Every little bit counts, which is how you end up with the sort of slope into the legalization of all sorts of vices, be it marijuana, be it skills games, all the stuff that gets categorized as vices, I should probably say, to be safe. But so it's just interesting that that's happening today as we have this conversation about sports betting today and the revenue play that it is for many, many states.
And I hope there's some funding in there for dealing with the gambling. I mean, we'll be talking about some of the policy issues as well.
For sure.
But we see that on that's the other side of it.
And and there is a funding imbalance right now in Pennsylvania, but they're going to spend more projected than they project to bring in tax revenue. They have reserves they can tap into, but only for so long.
It's being tapped into.
It's already being tapped.
Yeah.
Our third story. Have you ever tapped into the attic, the closet, just to see what's back there? You never know what you might find. Maybe in your aunt's closet, your grandma's closet. There's all sorts of knickknacks, right?
Yeah, I'd be scared, though. What's going to fall out of the closet?
Don't be scared. Nothing scary happens in this story. Third story, I can assure you, if you're watching, nothing scary is going to happen. Great story from The Inquirer's Matt Breen about a 15-year-old kid from Westchester who's at his grandma's house in Florida a few years back and found the Philadelphia Eagles 1960 NFL championship trophy back there.
Wow.
The trophy. So the way that the family had ended up with it is that the jeweler who made the trophy was a Center City jeweler, had presented it to the then owner, James P. Clark. Well, he's kind of the owner. It's complicated. We can put that to the side for now. And this jeweler made it for the guy. But then the guy died pretty shortly after that, after the Eagles won the championship in 1960. So the trophy got kicked around and it ended up in this woman's closet. And the kid finds it. He brings it back to Westchester
where he lives.
And they watch games with the trophy. They rub it for good luck during the games. And the Eagles have been very good ever since they did this. I think it was like 2017. And so it's a fascinating story. It's also interesting. This trophy, again, was made for the owner after the Eagles won. There was no official NFL trophy that teams got to keep back then. There was no Lombardi trophy, no big fancy prize. So this is what's left. It's just something that a jeweler made for a guy back in 1960.
Pretty cool find in grandma's closet.
Yeah.
Who went
Have
to
you found
closet.
Anything in you grandma's
know what?
Closet?
You know, my family was kind of weird. Like, you didn't go in people's closets. You know what I mean? Because if you went in their closet,
stop
they might go in your closet. So we had this
It was a no closet thing?
We didn't go in the closet.
Is that an unspoken rule or a spoken rule?
But I mean, if you were living, we didn't go in your closet. Now, now you have to kind of go in grandma's closet if she's no longer with us. But this was a cool find, I have to say that. How about you? What was the coolest thing you found in a closet?
The only thing that comes to mind is my grandparents used to own a clothing store in Salt Lake City, Utah. And one time I was at my grandpa's house and he just had this whole treasure trove of really cool vintage stuff, mostly women's stuff from the 60s. My wife took a dress, a wrap dress that she still wears today.
Wow.
Makes me think of my grandparents.
Aww, so, every time she wears it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Green, beautiful green dress.
What a nice
memory. Speaking of green, lots of green being made in the world. Sports gambling. We're going to talk about it on the other side of this break on Studio 2. Stick with us.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. The Super Bowl is just days away, and Philadelphia Eagles fans are fired up. For those of us not attending in New Orleans, we're planning our game day parties, and a lot of people are placing bets. Sports betting has exploded in recent years. Last year, Americans spent $150 billion, an exponential uptick from just $7 billion in 2018.
7 to 150.
Wow.
Think about that. These days, making a bet is practically effortless. Using apps from the likes of DraftKings and FanDuel, you can do it anytime, anywhere. And not surprisingly, that convenience has led to financial and emotional harm, especially among young men. So what is the price consumers are paying for easy access to sports betting? How is this industry changing professional sports and our relationship to them? And why are young men most at risk for becoming addicted?
And with us in studio to discuss online sports betting, how it's hooking Americans, and what, if anything, we can do about it, are Andrew Brandt, Executive Director of the Morehead Center for the Study of Sports Law at Villanova Law. Welcome.
Thank you.
We also have Harry Levant, Director of Gambling Policy with the Public Health Advocacy Institute at Northeastern University. Harry is also a gambling addiction therapist at Ethos in Philadelphia and a person recovering from gambling addiction. Welcome.
Thank you, Sherry.
And our question for you, our listeners today, how has the rise of online sports gambling affected you, your family, your friends? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, drop your comments right there in the live chat.
And so, Andrew, I want to start with you. I mean, you heard the numbers, right? Online sports betting has exploded in the 6 years since the U.S. Supreme Court reshaped the legal landscape in that industry. Why do you think it took off so darn fast?
You know, I've never seen any part or policy of sports law or sports business that has done a sea change like sports betting. I grew up in sports business. I worked as an agent. I worked as a team executive with the Packers for 10 years. Sports betting was completely taboo. You could not go there. We know that in law, Pete Rose, all these people, Tony Romo couldn't even go to a fantasy football convention years ago. I tried to have a fantasy football contest at the Packers in 2008. They wouldn't let me. This is how it's
changed.
A contest?
What type of contest?
So have our coaches and executives do a fantasy draft before the season.
They with said, money no, changing hands or no?
No money.
No money. And you couldn't do it.
Couldn't do Packers, couldn't do money. And the league said, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
It's just such a taboo. So what changed? Well, New Jersey started trying to implement sports betting back in 2011. And for 7 years, they fought the NFL, the NBA, NCAA, NHL, lost at every turn. In other words, New Jersey lost at every turn. Every turn.
Yeah.
And the NFL, all these leagues fought it in the name of integrity, right? The name of integrity of the game. But lo and behold, no legal expert, including me, ever thought the Supreme Court would take the case. It did.
Yeah.
I went to that case. I couldn't see much. I was right behind Chris Christie.
Yeah.
But he kind of blocked out the sun. But anyway, oh my God, they won.
Yeah.
New Jersey won the case. And as you may have mentioned, I think the NFL and all these leagues maybe publicly wanted to win the case, but privately wanted to lose because it has been a bonanza for them.
Let's talk about the ways that they make money. Because they have partnerships with books. Yes. So that's one way to make money. The gambling companies advertise during the games, which I guess increases the value of the rights.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other ways that these leagues have profited from the rise in sports gambling?
Engagement. We saw with fantasy sports before real gambling how engaged these fans become with betting. Now, mm-hmm. the leagues always said, well, fantasy, that's not gambling. That's just a mishmash of players. It's not team outcomes, etc. But of course it's gambling.
Yeah.
And as Harry will talk about, that is gambling, and that led to this sort of acceptance of gambling. And then, of course, the NFL and NBA placed teams in Las Vegas, the mecca of gambling. So the high road was gone at that point.
And Harry, you want to comment? Yeah.
There's another piece to this, mm-hmm. which is the leagues are selling their real-time data to the gambling industry.
Mm-hmm.
They have created a fundamentally new, inherently dangerous, and frankly, defectively designed gambling product called micro-betting, where people are betting on every single micro-event. Will the next running play be more or less than 4.5 yards? Instant, nonstop betting on every single micro-event in the game. That's the most...
And they can generate these odds just like algorithmically.
They can't generate them by human beings. They're being generated algorithmically with AI.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's all done because for billions with a B, not only the NFL, but every sports league and organization you can think of sells their real-time data to the industry.
Mm.
Now, unlike any other industry I can think of, gambling doesn't put anything new into the marketplace. They're not selling anything.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles are going to play the Chiefs on Sunday regardless of whether people bet or not.
Right.
What the industry does is they spend billions of dollars to get the data and then turn it around using AI to create these nonstop micro-betting opportunities.
Like, I know Harry's going to be really interested in who's going to score the first third-quarter touchdown in the Chargers versus Raiders game based on Harry's past behavior. I can target that bet to you.
And I don't think anyone back in 2018, mm-hmm. when the Supreme Court was deciding what's known as the Murphy case that paved the way for this, no one had any idea this would happen.
And I want you to kind of comment on what Andrew just said about engagement, because I saw a statistic. The average fan would watch about 15 games when they talk about NFL, just their favorite team, their home team. But now with sports betting, they watch an average of 50 games. How do, because for folks who may not bet on sports and don't really know how these apps work, how do they sort of suck you in and get you to, you know, tripling and quadrupling the number of games you watch?
Andrew and I were actually looking at this on one of the apps while we waited to come in. It's what, 12:15 in the afternoon on a beautiful winter Tuesday here in Philadelphia. Right now, you can bet on a tennis match from 3/4 of the way around the world. They suck you in because the action never stops. There are no breaks. We're talking, obviously, about the Super Bowl on Sunday. But at the end of the Super Bowl, there'll be plenty of other things. The action never stops. So they suck you in, they figure out what you like, and they keep feeding that to you.
Yeah.
And in concert with that, the ability to, you know, if you want, as part of your experience, to make that bet and then watch that tennis match, there is so much more just coverage. You can go on like ESPN Watch app. They have stuff from all over the world that you can tap into and presumably also bet on. And then the other thing, Andrew, I wanted to ask you about, because you talked about engagement.
Yeah.
It's, to me, it's not just that you want to watch more games. It's that when you used to watch a game, you wanted to know who won or lost. By the third quarter, if the game was decided, you might be checked out. You might be on your phone. You might be talking to someone, talking to a friend. Now, if you've got some sort of prop bet that could still be decided in the third or fourth quarter, the league now has my attention again, where it had lost it 10 years. That's got to be huge in terms of revenue, right?
I mean, the trajectory is amazing. Remember, we talked about fantasy football, where you sort of get together in late August, draft your fantasy team with your friends and family, take Saquon number one, whatever, and then you're sort of checking it throughout the year. Well, something else happened. It's called Daily Fantasy, and these two companies that were startups, they were startups in 2015, called FanDuel and DraftKings, started getting mind share. They said, well, let's just advertise the heck out of this thing on every broadcast. This is without legalized gambling. Mm-hmm. It's fantasy. So instead of your season-long fantasy, like, I'm going to do it this week. And then basketball, hockey, baseball, every game. And then you have people submitting 50, 100, 500 cards before an NBA game tips off. And the algorithms and Wall Street type betting, and it all exploded. And all of a sudden, it's like, wow, this is real.
Yeah.
So 2018, the decision. It didn't legalize sports betting. What it did was allow states to legalize sports betting. As we sit here today, 38 states wow. and the District of Columbia. Now, we won't get all 50. Utah is never going to legalize. Yeah. But we're going to get close, and it has become part of our sports experience. Not only gamblers, but everyone.
Yep. Yeah, it's in your pocket. By the way,
yes.
If you want to participate in this conversation, you at home, you can call in. Our question for you is, has sports betting changed the way you watch sports? Have you or someone you know struggled with gambling addiction? You can call in. You can share your thoughts. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching the show on WHYY's YouTube channel, hello. Be sure to drop your comments or question in the live. By the way, we have a caller, Anthony from Philly's on the line and wants to talk about gambling. Anthony, you are on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, I actually had a great time when sports betting first got legalized, and I guess it must have been 2021 that we could download BetMGM in Philadelphia. And I tried to take kind of an honors kid approach. I've been playing fantasy baseball for a long time and quite well at it. And I really just stuck to, like, pitcher strikeout props. And I had a good time that summer. Like, I watched my bankroll and I managed things well, and I got lucky here and there, but also just had pretty sound fundamentals. And I was able to finish in the green, you know, several months in a row. And then I've just found that, like, you're making a map for yourself, and if you're crunching the numbers and you're keeping a real tight handle on your books, you can do you can be responsible, but it is a really slippery slope.
Yeah.
And they don't give you very good reporting. That's the thing that I wanted to make a comment on and hear what these experts
reporting.
Had to say about.
What do you mean by that, Anthony? What's reporting?
Well, like, if I want to see all of the transactions that I've made, you know, like all of the deposits, my lifetime wins and losses, that's there in piecemeal, but a lot of these sites, and I'll just mention BetMGM because that is one that I'm most familiar with, they have these windows of like 30 days or 90 days you can look back.
And I see what you're saying.
You really have to go through customer service to get like Excel spreadsheet type data. And if you're serious about it, like that's stuff you have to be doing.
Yeah. Interesting.
And it just felt like a carnival game of, you know, a lot of surfaces that are well designed by people, you know, 10 times, you know, 10 people, maybe as sharp as I am, all getting paid to do it. And over the years, it got worse. Like these algorithms got more sophisticated.
It got worse for you, Anthony.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Anthony from
Anthony
Philly.
Anthony from Philly.
Fascinating conversation. And people who, I know people who are into sports betting and online and in their phones, and they think they're really smart people. But then at a certain point, you do lose. And so, you know, Harry, can you talk about the slippery slope a little bit? Because people think, I mean, these are people who've been watching games for years. They you know, Monday morning quarterback, right? All the time. They think they know. And then you get in these apps and it can become addictive and you could lose big.
Sherry, I think it's important for me to note, I'm not opposed to the properly regulated legalization of sports gambling.
Okay.
I'm not a prohibitionist in any way at all. What I am opposed to is exactly what our caller was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This product is designed in a way to remove the money part and just keep people engaged with the action part of this. We have known for more than 12 years that gambling is an addictive product, just like heroin and opioids and tobacco and alcohol and cocaine. If you create apps combined with AI to deliver a product at light speed, that the business model is keep people engaged with it, people are going to get hurt. That's what the caller was describing.
Yeah.
None of my patients walk into my office. They crawl in, and it started as fun for all of them. This isn't designed any longer for fun. We were kind of joking around at the start. You can bet on a serve in a tennis match. That's not designed for fun. That's designed for constant action. I wish, Sherry, this was like you're describing it, as something people enjoyed during the Super Bowl, enjoyed during an NFL Sunday.
But some people surely do.
No question about it.
Engage that way.
No question about it. The overwhelming majority of people do.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, the product is designed in a way that is dangerous. That's something we need to begin talking about.
Yeah. I just want to read this comment and ask you a question based on it, Harry. This is from AGB on YouTube. I work at a financial institution and have seen the impact of sports betting almost daily. People drain their accounts completely to bet on apps when in the past they had to drive to places like AC to spend that kind of money. I've seen people spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a week. So my question, because you said you're not a prohibitionist, think this can be regulated. My question is, doesn't the industry need people like that in order to survive? Like, maybe it's just a small percentage, but they need people to become addicted, to lose huge amounts to make the rest of it profitable.
I agree with you. And the regulations we need are to prevent the industry from doing that type of thing. There's overwhelming statistical evidence.
But could they still make money?
I'm more concerned about my brothers and sisters in society.
I hear that, totally.
But yes, the industry can still make money and be safe. The alcohol industry hasn't gone out of business. We found ways to regulate it. The tobacco industry hasn't gone out of business. We found ways to regulate it.
To reduce the harm.
To reduce the harm and to make consumption. With every other addictive product, government regulates the advertising, distribution, and promotion. With gambling, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you were talking about in the news on the way in. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is taking a cut the more people gamble. You'll never hear me use the word revenue. This is not revenue. These are losses by the citizens of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Let's put the right wording on it. The gambling industry can make money, but it does not need to be predatory the way that YouTube person writes in.
You know, every one of those 38 states that have legalized gambling has money set aside for compulsive gambler, Gamblers Anonymous, hotlines, etc. That's part of the legislative discussion to get this on the books. The bigger question is that working? Is that just a pro forma? Is that a check the box?
Yep.
Because you hear people like Anthony, I know lawyers, doctors, etc., maybe not addicted, but they're like, yeah, I lost the Sunday afternoon game, but I doubled down on Sunday night, and I lost that, but I tripled down on Monday night. Now, just think about that in a younger, not developed brain, in someone that really is into it. So happens all the time.
And I want to ask you about these efforts to sort of provide support for people who may get addicted, because from what I see, it requires the individual who is dealing with a compulsive gambling issue to recognize it and then seek help. But most people don't really seek help until they're, you know, bottomed out.
The industry calls it their responsible gaming model. And I said, I'm a clinician. I'm all for treatment. Treatment is important. But the best form of treatment is prevention. Mm. I don't want to wait until someone meets the diagnostic criteria for gambling addiction. By that time, they are hurting. Their family is hurting. Lives have been ripped apart. What we have to do, as your question points out, Sherry, is change the focus away from waiting until the harm has occurred to regulating the product before the harm occurs. Or think of it this way. The current model pulls people out of the river after they're drowning. Appropriate regulation will create guardrails so people don't fall in the river in the first place, but can still enjoy the product. That's what I am for.
Yeah. What's so amazing is how the leagues, have I talked about the history, just embrace it. You can't watch a sports product without being inundated.
It's unbelievable.
And Kevin Hart's with this one, and Jamie Foxx is with this one. And it's like, oh my God, yeah, of course, I got to bet. Everyone's doing it. The cool kids are doing it. The leagues embrace it.
Yeah.
Like the NFL, I love the NFL. They're saying all these ads. Yeah, let's do it.
And by the way, you mentioned the ads. We want to play one. We have an ad featuring LeBron James and Kevin Hart.
He's got an NFL offer.
Don't play with me.
Think I'm going to take it.
Aren't you a little too old to be playing football?
Wait, what?
They want somebody that can run a 40, not somebody that is 40. When the coach calls your number, you're going to say, G56, bingo. How you going to celebrate a win? You going to give everybody butterscotch candy? probably out your pocket with no wrappers on it. Just gonna give them raw candy. That's nasty, by the way.
With DraftKings, new customers bet $5 to get 200 instantly in bonus bets and a month of NFL Plus Premium. The crown is yours.
By the way, I have to say, it's a pretty entertaining ad.
It is. Hannah D
on YouTube says, it's alarming the amount of ads for sports betting. I don't even think I'm the target audience, but I get them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then Jim Harris on YouTube says, gambling was safer when the mob ran it. And look, he means that he's being facetious. But I think one of the arguments, and I'll put this to you, Andrew, is that this was even more pernicious when it was underground and when it was run by shady figures. Bring it into the light and regulate it.
Well, that's the argument. And Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, actually wrote an op-ed in the New York Times in 2016 saying this. And he was ahead of his time. No one was doing this. Of course, they were fighting the New Jersey in court at the time as well. But we now have it in our face, and it's regulated. And I remember asking NFL owners about moving the Oakland Raiders to Las Vegas. I said, what are your concerns about Vegas? Well, it's a small market. It's a tourist market. Will it last? Will it be sustainable? I'm like, wait a minute. What about gambling? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, no.
We're not worried about that.
The most regulated market in the world, of course. Yeah, regulation. And it just became this like, yeah, we're fine. And I don't know if we're fine. But we're at this point where you can't ignore it. It's on your phone. It's incredibly accessible. And all these other companies, we mentioned BetMGM and we mentioned others, but there is this duopoly. 78% of the market is FanDuel, DraftKings.
That's wow.
And ESPN's trying to get into it. Fanatics is trying to get into it. It's a tough market to break into, but they're going to offer bigger bonuses. They're going to offer more reload bonuses. They're going to try to get these young kids in it some way. It's just, it's a fight for the minds of the souls of these people.
And I want to read this comment from Riley, who says, ads for DraftKings, online casinos, etc., are on every major social media app. This is a vice known to be commonly addictive based on psychological studies. Meanwhile, you can't advertise for cigarettes, but these are in the faces of people virtually every day. Companies like this already have substantial customer bases. I want to talk about DraftKings a little bit because, you know, I think about New Jersey. New Jersey was pushing the envelope years ago, for years, trying to get online sports betting approved. They got it from the U.S. Supreme Court. And now New Jersey has filed a lawsuit against DraftKings saying, whoa, 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 you guys are using deceptive practices to draw people in using those ads. So Andrew, could you kind of explain how the app sort of draw people and get new customers? Because there's people who probably had zero, besides the ads, but they had zero, you know, interest maybe in online sports betting. But now, all of a sudden, they're dangling a carrot and they're on the slippery slope.
Yeah, I mean, they're preying on the love of the action, the love of the game. And what is so amazing, like you said, Cherry, is that this was New Jersey. This is New Jersey. Yeah. This is the number one advocate of sports gambling in America. Fought it all these leagues for 7 years. Got it. And now they're saying, "Hey, you're not doing what we thought you would do.
Mm-hmm.
You're engaging in these practices. Like Harry can talk about the reload bonuses and jump in here, and we'll give you a bonus here. And did you see the Seahawks spread move on that? Did you see the Sixers spread move down? Jump in. So I'd like to see what happens out of this because it could be a precedent for all these 38 states.
Yeah, and Harry, could you, and specifically what it does to the brain when you're sort of offered these
What we see with all of the ads, and full disclosure, I'm the director of gambling policy at the Public Health Advocacy Institute at Northeastern University School of Law, and our organization has filed a class action lawsuit against DraftKings on deceptive advertising.
Oh.
To give you an example, each time DraftKings comes into a new market, they offer on their apps, all of these advertising platforms, a $1,000 sign-up bonus. What they don't tell you is to get that bonus, first you have to deposit $5,000. Then you have to gamble $25,000 in the first 90 days. And then, by the way, they never give you any money. They simply give you 1,000 credits to keep gambling. That's the stuff you learn when you read the fine print.
Yep. Mm.
What it says on the ad is a $1,000 bonus. In many ways, this is akin to the neighborhood drug dealer pulling you in with an addictive product, promising you more, and then rewarding you for ongoing use.
Two things I want to talk about on the other side of this break. One is some of the studies that are coming out showing the impact on society writ large. So not just the one person who's having a problem with it, but the sort of like these before and after studies they've done in states mm-hmm. that show what's happened on a larger scale. So I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about with you, Andrew, the impact on the sports product itself, the integrity of the leagues. Here's an email from Ellen. I was at the Sixers game on Sunday. Parentheses, what a rough one. They all are. Yeah. Sitting center court. You get a nice view of people on their phones. There were at least 8 to 10 people sports betting throughout the night while they're sitting center court at a basketball game. Let's think about that, and let's talk about it on the other side of this break. Give us a call here at Studio 2, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org or leave a comment right there in the YouTube live stream. We'll be right back.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back, friends, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are looking at online sports betting, which in just a few years has grown into an enormous industry. It's changing sports and it's changing people's lives. A recent survey found that 10% of young men showed signs of problem gambling. We have two guests with us in studio today. We have Andrew Brandt, Executive Director of the Morehead Center for the Study of Sports Law at Villanova Law. We also have Harry Levant, Director of Gambling Policy with the Public Health Advocacy Institute at Northeastern University. He's a gambling addiction therapist in Philadelphia. He's also a person recovering from gambling addiction.
Our question for you, how has the rise of online sports gambling affected you, your family, your friends? Or if you just have general opinions on this topic, give us a call, 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org, or leave a comment right there in the YouTube chat.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the rules for players because we talk about the game a little bit. Can you outline how has sports gambling changed it for players? What are they allowed to do? What are they not allowed to do?
Well, first of all, I have heard from active players, because I'm an expert, they say, what? Exactly that question. Mm-hmm. They're not getting, they don't feel like they're getting it from the leagues because it's so in your face. It's so embraced by all these sports leagues. Like, well, can I do this? And they're sometimes surprised to hear me say no. Generally, athletes can bet on other sports besides their sport. Mm-hmm. Generally, they can. They can't in their facility. They can't do any betting in their facility or on team travel or representing the team in some community event. But generally, athletes can now bet on other sports as long as it's legal. If you're in California, if you're in Texas, you're in Utah, you can't. But if it's legal in these 38 states and you're a football player, you can bet on a baseball game. You can bet on a hockey game, but not on your sport. Hmm. There's the taboo. There's the bright line. Can't bet on your sport anywhere, anytime, anyhow. So we've seen a baseball player suspended for life. We've seen Jontay Porter in the NBA suspended for life. We are seeing
active investigation into Terry Rozier, the Miami Heat.
And we've got several NFL players, including Jameson Williams, who was suspended 6 games. Isaiah Rodgers on the Eagles, that was out for a year due to this when he was a member of the Colts. So sometimes players are like, what I say, the NFL, all these leagues are saying to the players, do as I say, not as I do. At least when it comes to your own sport. Now, again, this is new. In recent years, you can bet on all these other sports because it's legal.
Yeah.
But you can't bet on your sport. So there is still that bright line that players can't cross. And some of them are confused about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is confusing, frankly. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention a couple of studies that I saw recently. One was from UCLA and USC. And what's so interesting about these studies is that because some states have this betting and some don't, you can do these comparative studies. They're almost like natural experiments. This one from UCLA and USC found that sports betting increases the risk of household bankruptcy by 25 to 30%, concentrated most among young men in low-income areas. And then this was the one that just blew me away. University of Oregon found legal sports betting leads to a roughly 9% increase in domestic violence. And Harry, you recently testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and you talked about this as a public health crisis. And in fact, Richie emails, how can we learn from the mistakes and successes of the opioid epidemic on how to bring this public health crisis of gambling to the table before it becomes as damaging as opioids? Why did you use that term, public health crisis, and how does that inform how we should regulate and attack this moving forward?
I used the term public health crisis because this is the beginning of a public health crisis, the full scope of which we're just beginning to understand. I use the term because we know scientifically that gambling addiction is just like heroin and opioid and tobacco and alcohol.
What does that mean scientifically?
Yeah.
In terms of what it does to your brain?
It is the dopamine, not the dough. In 2013, the American Psychiatric Association recognized that gambling addiction is just like a drug or alcohol addiction and categorized it in what's called DSM-5, which is the diagnostic manual for healthcare providers like myself and physicians. It is categorized as a full-fledged addiction, just like drugs and alcohol. We know that scientifically. Every accrediting authority around the world has recognized this for a decade. So what's different now is we're delivering this addictive product, as our callers and YouTube folks have been pointing out, at light speed.
Yeah.
If you deliver an addictive product at light speed, you're going to hurt people. I'm really glad you brought up particularly the UCLA study. It's the newest study to come out, and it looks specifically at online sports gambling and finds that in our most economically challenged communities, the harm is the greatest. No one's talking about that yet.
So how do we address that? If we're taking a public health approach, what does that look like for this particular problem?
It looks like a recognition of two fundamental things. First, the responsible gaming model that the industry pushes is an abject failure. It waits until people have already suffered harm. The public health approach, as Andrew and I have been discussing, is designed to prevent harm. The second thing it does, we must do, is recognize states are not equipped to regulate this on their own. It's too big. It involves the world's largest media companies, sports leagues, teams, players and owners, all of these gambling companies. We need federal regulation. And I'm proud to have worked with both Senator Blumenthal and Congressman Paul Tonko introducing what's called the Safe Bet Act. The Safe Bet Act is public health legislation. It does not ban sports gambling. Quite the opposite. It regulates sports gambling from a public health perspective to prevent harm before it occurs and allow the industry to make a profit and people to enjoy the product safely. That's the biggest thing we can do right now.
I want to ask a follow-up question to that, because we read this article in preparation for today's show, and it gave an example of a problem better. Husband had placed $1,500 plus in bets in 2020. I apologize, 1,560 bets in 2020, 2,600 plus bets in 2021. It jumped up to 6,000 bets in 2022. And by 2023, they had 14,700 plus sports bets totaling hundreds of thousands of dollars. Okay. And this is someone who made about $175,000 a year. Question: are there red flags on these apps that could easily be sort of like identified so that people who are, you see these types of numbers jumping and the number of ads and the amount of money spent, that would save someone from losing everything that they have? And Harry or Andrew, I'm not sure who would be the best person. Harry,
probably both of us. The ability to stop people is there. Yeah. The business model is quite the opposite. We know from research worldwide that about 80% of the profits come from 15% of the most active gamblers. What we've learned in just 6 years here in the United States is that the responsible gaming model in partnership with the states is failing. People are getting hurt. Calls to problem gambling helplines are growing exponentially. There needs to be a different approach.
So Harry, what could you do? Could you stop allowing credit card? Like, give us some
things. I'll give you some real things that are in the Safe Bet Act. Number one, affordability checks. I'll give you an exact example. Affordability checks do not have the government put its hand in your pocket. That's not what they do. What affordability checks do is says to the gambling industry, if you're going to take more than $10,000 a month in bets from someone, you have to run an affordability check to make sure this person has the financial means to afford this, just like we do when you buy a car. Mm. We limit the number of deposits a person can make in a day. What gets people hurt is chasing losses. Andrew mentioned reload bonuses. What actually happens if you go bankrupt in your account on one of these apps like DraftKings or FanDuel, they immediately offer you a 50% credit reload. Put more money in right now. Mm. We'll match it with more credits.
Stop that.
We end that immediately. We end credit card deposits. Why should people be able to borrow money at 30% to gamble with? And we regulate micro betting. The in-game betting that gets people chasing.
Yeah, that AI-generated stuff we talked about earlier. From the league side, from the competitive fairness side, Andrew Brandt, we have seen these scandals pop up.
Yeah.
The question for me, when you talk about some of these scandals, is it evidence that the monitoring systems for competitive fairness are working? Like, for instance, someone figured out that this very marginal NBA player named Jontay Porter was passing along information about his status, and they knew it because money came in weirdly on like a Jontay Porter prop bet. Is it evidence to you that these systems for monitoring undue influence are working, or do you think it's more tip of the iceberg and there's lots of stuff that's going undetected?
I think when it comes to team and league personnel, whether it's a GM, whether it's a coach or a player, it's all being flagged. The NFL, the NBA, they enter into these contracts with these data integrity companies like Sportradar, Genius Sports, and their job is to flag, like a Jontay Porter bet. That was a parlay bet where if he didn't play a certain number of minutes, the under wins. And, of course, he took himself out. People were making huge bets on a 12th player on the team staying in the game or not. That's going to get a flag. Yeah. And that way they found these players.
It's easier to flag that than I would imagine the old way, where you had to know, you know, there wasn't like a digital system
right.
for monitoring.
It's not, and I think that's the point. What these leagues will tell you, or what regulators will tell you, with a regulated, legalized sports betting, there's no credit. So back in the day, you go to your bookie, I'm a little short, go ahead, bet some more.
Yeah.
So they will say, hey, that's great, right? No credit. But then there are these other ways to lure you in. And every league is looking for one thing above anything else: how to attract and maintain younger viewers.
Yeah, a lot of young people.
Gambling does it. Gambling is a new way. Young people love data. They love numbers. They love new ways to get invited into the action. And I see it with my students even. Like, wow, this is a way to just jump in every night on an NBA game.
Can I ask you a question on that, though? Do you think that they're maybe making a short-term play for audience, but damaging themselves in the long term? And I'll ask you this way. One thing I've heard people speculate is that this generation of fans won't have that deep allegiance to team and community that sustains you as a sports fan over a lifetime. They're only getting in this very narrow way through betting. Do you think the leagues might regret that in the long
term? I sound like an old timer. I agree with you. I just think we've created a new type of fan, a fan that's a gambling fan, that's in it for the numbers, that's in it to win it, and that maybe they do have a team they root for, of course. Everyone's got sort of that team they grew up with. But I think that's changing. I think future generations are going to have less of that emotional attachment to teams. And, of course, the business of sports is now more free agency and more movement among players. But that is all related to it. I do think we're losing that emotional attachment to teams, creating this new type of transactional fan.
Yeah.
I don't bet anymore, but I'll make you a prediction. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a division between the gambling companies and the sports leagues and the players at some point in time. Huh. People like LeBron James are going to come to understand the harm that's taking place as more and more studies come out. In addition to that, the relationship that started off as just a financial one, as Andrew's describing, sports have sold their soul to the gambling industry. Yeah. Sports used to belong to children and families and parents and grandparents. That's gone. That is going to cause a problem for the sports leagues. We're just beginning to see it.
Yeah.
And very respectfully, I partially disagree with Andrew about whether this is the tip of the iceberg with these scandals. It is absolutely just the tip of the iceberg. We only know the ones that are getting caught. with micro betting on every single event and every single play and every single swing of a golf club, there's no possible way to keep the integrity. We're just beginning to see it. And look how quickly it's happening. There's more harm that's going to take place. I predict it's going to divide the gambling industry and the sports leagues from that public health perspective.
A schism coming. Okay.
And so I want to ask about the political will. We talked about regulation. We've talked about how it could put up some guardrails, save people before they hit rock bottom. Is there a political will to actually get this done? And who's on either side of pushing the envelope?
Yeah, money always talks. And you can speak to your Safe Bet Act and all these things coming in to try to make reforms. But there are significant lobbies now of the gambling industry. It has been a significant lobby, but it seems to be getting even bigger. Because now you have these massive leagues invested in this product. The NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, hockey, they don't mind gambling. They accept it. They embrace it. You can't watch an event without 6, 8, 10 ads. We're going to see it during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So that is powerful.
Yeah, and your thoughts as we wrap up.
My thoughts to wrap up are, and again, I don't gamble, but don't bet against the public health approach. Don't bet against the Safe Bet Act. This is a real problem. And I was very happy to hear bipartisan interest when I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee in the Safe Bet Act. I predict for you, more and more the federal government's going to look at this and say, you know what, this thing's really big. It's really out of control. There needs to be regulation.
As we often say on this show, we shall see.
Mm-hmm.
I think this, first of all, great conversation today. I want to thank both of you.
Love this conversation, yes.
Andrew Brandt, Executive Director of the Morad Center for the Study of Sports Law at Villanova. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, guys. Really enjoyed it.
And Harry Levant, Director of Gambling Policy with the Public Health Advocacy Institute at Northeastern University, a gambling addiction therapist in Philly and a person recovering from gambling addiction. Harry, thanks for your time.
It's been my pleasure. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. Yes, and thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Besser, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Adam Staniszewski, and Tina Calicay, engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman. Arendt, we will talk to you tomorrow.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?